It's 3:04, and you're tuned to Primetime Quad Cities. I'm your companion for this hour. My name is Jim Bennett, and today I'm taking the unusual step of diving right into our topic because it may be as important a program as I have ever broadcast. I would invite you right now to try and imagine the incomprehensible horror of learning that your only son had just been killed on the battlefields of Afghanistan. Then, imagine being approached by one of the largest news organizations in the world just a few days after your son's burial to discuss the possibility of their publishing a gory, explicit photograph of your maimed son in his dying moments following an RPG attack. Then, imagine further emphatically stating your deep opposition to your son's image being used in that way, only to learn that they went ahead and published the picture anyway around the globe. John Bernard, himself a retired Marine, doesn't have to imagine this nightmare. He and his wife Sharon are in the midst of it while still in the throes of fresh grief over the death of their son, Lance Corporal Joshua Bernard, killed in action in the middle of August. It's a situation so repugnant that it prompted the Secretary of Defense himself, Robert Gates, to write to Associated Press leadership, roundly condemning what he characterized as the AP's lack of compassion. With remarkable candor, John Bernard spoke with me. I asked him about Joshua as a person and as a Christian.
He was sort of a quiet, shy, humble kid all of his life. And that really didn't change. I mean, he became a little bit more open once he joined the Corps, but he was still a very humble guy. And very thoughtful, I would say. Very thoughtful, very introspective, and very much understood, the tenets of the gospel, and took them personally. I mean, he gave his life to Christ at a very young age.
I'm grateful you have that assurance, as I'm sure you and your wife Sharon and your daughter Katie all are, that he is with the Lord Jesus. You yourself, a career Marine, at one point would have had young Joshua come to you and at a time of war on multiple fronts say to you, "Dad, I want to join the Marines." What was that like for you? What happened?
I needed to know that when he did this, that he was doing it for the right reason, that he wasn't doing what so many do, just following in Dad's footsteps kind of thing. And we were very close, and I didn't want him carrying any kind of ridiculous burden. So so I kind of gave him reasons to not join. And it wasn't like, it's a bad place. It was more along the line of, you have all these other gifts and all these other things. This really, you sure this is what you should be doing, And he never wavered. I mean, not once. He was absolutely adamant that this is what he was called to do, was to serve. And serve as a Marine, and understanding that his testimony, would certainly have a bearing in that environment.
You've said that you raised your children to see wherever they are as their mission field. And for Joshua, obviously, the Marine Corps would have been no exception. What did you hear from him as far as how he was seeing Jesus Christ at work in the lives of his brethren, Marines, or in the places where he was? What did you hear from him?
Early on, he ran into some smaller problems with hazing. And there was something that I had never witnessed in my entire career. I would hear about it after the fact, and it surprised me that it was occurring at all. And it turns out he was actually subjected to some of that. He chose to endure it, even though it was against Marine Corps policy. But his reason was that he thought later, he would talk about respect, but respect was a broad term for him. The point being, if he was ever going to be taken seriously on any level, it would be better to just deal with it, and just be done with it. The only cautionary note I gave him was that, look, if you do this, number one, you're standing in violation of Marine Corps order. You need to understand that you could be held, held liable, as a victim. And number two, if you do this, the positive point might be that, with greater conviction later, you can turn the tide.
Right.
A generation in the Marine Corps is exactly one stripe, and you can change an entire generation and do away with this later. So if you want to stay focused that way, I'll support you in it. And he did. And when they came back from Iraq on his last tour, he made it his business to let those know who we're talking about doing this to the next group coming in. He says, I got news for you. The first time I see one of you doing it, I'm turning you in. You're finished that day, you know. And there wasn't one more incident of it again. It just ended. It withered on the vine. One of the guys that had hazed him, we met on a trip down there. And he was looking guilty, I mean, as I was speaking to him. And I never let on that I knew, but you could see it in his eyes. He was just downtrodden. And actually, Josh got him involved in a pretty serious Bible study later. And actually was holding Bible studies down there. They were ongoing. He was encouraging guys, and they were wanting to learn, and they were listening.
And I understand that the kind of Christian, the kind of Marine, the kind of man that Joshua was did leave a very deep impact, and it was seen at the actual Marine Corps memorial service for him, according to a phone call you received. Isn't that right?
The battalion commander called me 2 days ago and told me during their field service, he was almost speechless. He never, ever witnessed anything like that, where so many Marines, he said, you know, some of these guys are battle-hardened, 19 to 23 years old, and seeing things that nobody should see.
Right.
And he said they were all in tears, and to a man, they were all completely heartbroken over having lost this particular Marine, and that they recognized in him something much closer to God than they had ever seen before. And so the suggestion is that, you know, God will use that.
The tragedy and loss that you've been feeling has certainly not been helped in any way, and undoubtedly been made so much worse by what I can only consider just a cruel and indecent act, which is the publication of a photograph of your son as in his final moments. A gory, sensationalistic, and wholly unnecessary photograph. The AP did, I don't want to say to their credit, but did at least wait until after your son's memorial service to publish it. But it's my understanding, did they contact you in advance? Can you tell me about that exchange?
Yeah, well, first of all, don't give them any credit. The only reason this story was held back was because they were looking for the rest of the story, so to speak. And so they waited until the reporter that was assigned to Maine, you know, came and visited with us, and then extracted from us. And I say extracted because I kind of got the understanding that he was actually concerned and might be writing this as a separate story rather than filling out the initial one. But in reality, they came just to get the rest of the story, and then were waiting, I think, for more documentation before they actually ran it. It had nothing to do with timing.
So you don't think this visit was any kind of display of respect or consideration to you, or that there was any sincere desire to seek your permission? Obviously, they didn't care about your permission, because when you denied it, they went ahead and published it.
I think they would have run that the day of if they could have. But nevertheless, he came out and showed me the photographs, which I handed them. And they were black and white, by the way, and fuzzy. And I handed them back to him and said, look, you know, neither my wife nor daughter need to see this. Nobody needs to see this. So if you're asking me my permission, you don't have it. You need to go back and tell them that absolutely no one needs to see this. This serves nothing. It serves no one. It doesn't honor him. It doesn't honor the Corps. It doesn't honor God. It doesn't honor this country. And it does not do them as an agency any service whatsoever. So he said he would take that back.
And then you even followed up with a phone call reiterating the same sentiments and didn't get you anywhere, did it?
As we all know, they ran it anyway. I have very little use for the people who took the photographs, and even less for the ones that ran it. They've had plenty of opportunity to reflect on it, and they did it anyway. The thing that comes out in the story is that the photographer had this moral dilemma in the moment that she was firing those photographs. Should I drop my camera and go help that Marine, or should I take photographs? The fact that that would even be a dilemma for anybody, I don't even know how to ascribe a thought to that. But the fact that she failed and went the wrong way, you know, says much. And all I can come back to is, you know, like Romans 1, you know, it's one of the places where God says he turns them over to a reprobate mind at some point, and the suggestion is that people have gone down a certain path and they've violated their conscience over and over and over again, and he finally says, fine, that's the way you want to be? You got it. It's all yours. And this person reflects that. And so I guess that person should be concerned about their eternal future. You know, my concern then is to go to the Marine Corps, which I've done, and let them know, because now it's irrelevant because the Marine Corps knows about it. So,
right.
I think what you'll find is even though they may have to keep them there, I think the biggest story they're going to be reporting are going to be the ants and the scorpions here pretty quick.
Well, the photographer, Julie Jacobson, her choice, and as you said, the fact that it even was a choice, really tells me about all I need to know about her. I view the mainstream media, and I'd be interested in your response to this. I mean, they basically, the individual in that role generally is operating on an overwhelming desire for recognition. I imagine she was thinking, I could get a Pulitzer.
Yeah.
I think the mainstream media as an institution is operating under two agendas. One, an indoctrination agenda to a certain political posture. The other, recognition in the form of sales, and they saw here an opportunity to present a very sensationalistic and horrible, horrifying situation, but to do so with an eye on the bottom line, motivated by profit.
No, there's absolutely no question. I mean, that is precisely, and I've reiterated exactly, that thesis, I mean, to everyone who's called. I mean, that is precisely the point. I told the AP reporter that. I told CNN that. I've told everybody who's called, there is only one purpose for this, and that was bottom line. That was selling rags. And that's what this was about. I mean, this does nothing to further the cause of the country, the Marine Corps, world peace, whatever you stand on, getting rid of the war, perpetuating the war. I don't care where you stand. It doesn't make any difference. It does nothing. It's voyeurism at its worst.
And I want to get to this next point. The real story that your son's death sheds light on has nothing to do with sensationalistic journalism, yellow journalism, whatever you want to call it. While the AP and its supporters and its critics are focused on the picture, there is a very deep concern you have and others should have about policy concerning how the United States Marine Corps is being allowed to conduct business on the battlefield. Tell us about that.
I had written a letter weeks before this happened and sent it out to Senators Snow, Collins, Representative Michoud, everybody at Fox News, the local. In fact, I called WCSH. And spoke to a girl there who I swear was yawning while I was talking to her, but she was completely disinterested and actually upset that she even had to listen to me, concerning, displaying concern over the new rules of engagement.
Right.
And the conditions that the Marines, specifically in Now Zod, were forced to work under. One company watching an area that would require, realistically, a regiment to cover. And not being able to take ground, not being able to fire, being denied fire missions. And this isn't the Marine Corps doing this. This is being, this is being handed down, from many, many echelons above, and complaining. You can't do this. This is murder. I mean, you can't send guys out there, tell them you're trained to do this, but you can't do it, and then tell them they got to walk streets where they can be fired on but can't return fire. You know, that led to this ambush, as much as anything else did. And add to that the fact that they had Afghan nationals. Like, guess what? You have to be a dope to look at the story and not realize that the interpreter was part of the problem. He disappeared moments before the ambush. He was part of the. He helped lead them into the fire sack. And the fact that to this day nobody's going to listen to this. They're going to blow right past it. The story is going to be about the voyeurism, and everything else is going to get lost. And these guys are still going to be languishing in an area where they're going to be required to be fired at, and not be able to do what they're trained to do, which is guess what? Hunt and kill. We need to do it thoughtfully. Get the job done, bring it to a humane close, and come home. And that's not happening here.
If you're just joining us, it's 3:18. We're speaking with John Bernard, and John is the father of the late Lance Corporal Joshua Bernard, United States Marine Corps, killed in action in Afghanistan last month, and it was Joshua's photograph, a gruesome, explicit photograph taken in his dying moments following that RPG attack that was published by the Associated Press over the emphatic objections of Mr. Bernard and his family. We'll be back in a moment to talk more about this controversial topic and one that certainly raises questions about journalistic ethics and simple human decency. It's 3:20. You're tuned to Moody Radio. This is Primetime Quad Cities. My name is Jim Bennett. And on this Labor Day edition of Primetime Quad Cities, my special guest today is John Bernard. And John is a retired Marine and the father of Lance Corporal Joshua Bernard, who sadly was killed in action after a Taliban ambush in Afghanistan. He was hit with a rocket-propelled grenade, and he died from his wounds. His dying moments were captured by an embedded Associated Press photojournalist. And over the emphatic objections of Mr. Bernard, the Associated Press released that photograph to news agencies around the world, many of which have published it. And this, as I mentioned, raises questions of journalistic ethics, simple human decency, and the fundamentals of courtesy and dignity. And as such, I want to return to the topic of the photograph with you, Mr. Bernard. The Associated Press, in defending their publication of the photograph, their director of photography released a statement. I'll read it to you. Our story and photos report on him and his last hours respectfully and in accordance with military regulations surrounding journalists embedded with U.S. forces. I would imagine you strongly disagree.
Well, reporters in general are, and I think the media at large, they're opportunists. You can write any kind of salacious remark you want about anybody these days, and you can go to court and sue somebody who's not guilty of anything. You can just pick a name out of the phone book and do it. And the court's more than happy to accommodate you. You've got no limit of lawyers who are willing to step forward and take on cases that they know are absolutely wrong, and make money on it. Why we would expect the media to act any better is beyond me. They're not held any higher standard. They may claim to hold themselves to a higher standard, but the reality is they don't. And this is evidence of it. And it's all about the bottom line. It's all about greed and avarice. It's all about, lining your pockets and getting a Pulitzer or getting a name, strung out somewhere. I mean, if this does nothing else for that one photographer, her name is now nationalized. So, and that's good news, bad news. I mean, you've got people who are notorious who then write books and become millionaires just because the media grabbed up their name and ran with it. So, this is the society we live in. And the Bible's pretty clear, society is going to break down to a point where it's almost unrecognizable.
Sure.
We read that 25 years ago, and I was like, I can't imagine society doing that, much less the United States.
Is there anything you want to state or add that I haven't asked you, something that you really want people to hear?
Yeah, and it's about the warrior spirit, and it's about the warrior in general. I forced myself to make remarks at my son's service. And people have remarked, how could you possibly do that? And the strength and all this. People are blind. If they think that somehow or another, I mustered something from within that, that others couldn't imagine. If there was something there, it was from God. But what was there is an absolute burning, intensely burning desire to make sure that my son's sacrifice was not vain. That people that were there would hear the gospel. And that people that were there would see warriors for what they are. There's this misunderstanding. Everybody knows what a football hero looks like, and I have absolutely zero love or respect for the sport, for any of the sports. These guys are involved in no doubt. I mean, just absolute throwdown, life and death, day to day. They are doing things that the average person in this country couldn't even imagine, and that's what a warrior does. That's how he lives. That's what he walks. He's already taken the possibility of his own demise, in hand. He's dealt with it, and he's put it in the backside of his mind, and he goes forward, and he does the unthinkable. And I would want people to understand that the warrior is not a single-faceted individual. He is a multifaceted individual. There are many, probably the largest percentage of Christians I've met wear a Marine Corps uniform. And even those that aren't, their hearts are stronger than anybody I've ever met in any other walk of life. They would give their lives for one another and for us in a heartbeat, and they live that. And I curiously enough, when I was putting this thing together, I looked back at the Old Testament to pull out some scripture, you know, about warriors, and I gave up because there were so many scriptures related to warriors that it became clear to me that it was probably more positive word given by God about warriors than any other group of people that have existed, men of valor, great warriors, listing them by name. How many people are listed by name in the Bible when you think about it? But there are lists of these men of valor who fought, you know. God isn't changing. He doesn't change from yesterday to today. What we find in the Old Testament, he didn't go against his word in the New. He uses the idea of a warrior and ascribes that sense of duty and purpose and endurance and discipline to the Christian, you know. And some people would say, well, he does that for sport, too. Yeah. But you can't find anybody he commends for his sport. You only find people that he commends for their diligence as warriors. You know, the sport analogy is literally just showing some of the same characteristics, endurance and discipline, but nothing about their character. But the warriors, he's speaking of their character when he's speaking of them. And people need to understand that these are the finest of our society. This isn't, you know, some small group of whatever. The recruiters right now are kicked back in their chairs with their feet up on the desk because this generation, for whatever reason, has all of a sudden found its soul, so to speak, when it comes to its idea of service and willingness to pay a price. You know, that was sadly lacking in my generation. 1972, when I signed, class of 250, I was the only person to sign in any branch of the service out of 250, and that played itself over and over again back then. Now, they got guys lining up, you know, and it's not for the money, and it's not because of a bad economy. It's because there's something stirring in these guys, you know, and they understand the value of that. And we devalue that with what the press is doing. We devalue that in our society by not paying attention to it. We devalue it by spending more time watching MTV and reality shows than we do knowing the geography of Afghanistan or little places like Nowzad and Delaram and Golestan and Gamzer and understand even what the Durand Line is, or you know, the Pashto tribe and how it affects the rest of what's going on in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and ultimately how it affects us, you know, by making stupid votes because they like the way somebody says the word change, you know, which we're now going to pay for a little while. I want them to understand that the best of us is in uniform, hands down. And in terms of people from the church's vantage point, the people that are most likely to be converted are in uniform. You don't want to miss that opportunity.
Wow. Final question then, sir. How can we pray for you and Sharon and Katie?
That somehow or another we would not dishonor God in his divine purpose in honoring Josh. And I believe he literally honored Josh in the way that he took him. Marines talk about dying with their boots on. He allowed Josh to die with his boots on because Josh led such a good life. Didn't smoke, didn't drink, didn't cavort, you know, if you know what I'm saying. He was just a straight shooter. He walked his talk. God honored him. The men over there are seeing that, have seen that, and they are crushed by his loss. And they are changing, I have no doubt, that we would not impede that, that we would become part of the process and hopefully get that message out to others.
John Bernard, thank you for speaking with us. And I know I speak for a number of the listeners that that is exactly how we will be praying for you, your daughter Katie, and your wife Sharon. God bless you, sir.